Welcome, everybody. This is another expert master class interview or interrogation, as I like to say. This time, our subject, our guest, and our victim is the amazing and awesome Corey Perlman. I'll give you a very quick intro to Corey, then I want to just jump right to Corey's brilliance. So Corey is a multiple number one best-selling author. So his first book that came out a few years ago is called eBootcamp, and Corey's empire, of course, is online at eBootcamp.com as well. His latest and greatest book is called Social Media Overload, and I think you're going to love this book. You're going to love this interrogation today because the very first line in Corey's book, and Corey's a true social media expert and online marketing expert, first line of the book is, you don't need to be on Twitter. And it goes from there. So here to unpack the social media craziness, wackiness, hype, and nonsense is my good friend and super guru, Corey Perlman. Welcome, buddy.
Thank you, David, for having me, buddy. Really appreciate it.
So first question is maybe spend a minute just talking about social media overload as a concept, and obviously that's the concept why you wrote the book, but how are we screwed up today around social media, and how do we start getting some sanity back into the picture?
Well, and again, I'm very, very appreciative of being here, and hopefully this time that we spend together, if there's any questions that come up as we go along or anything like that, feel free to chime in and let us know. You know, David, as you know, as a fellow author and speaker, you're supposed to get a book out every 18 months, and I wrote my first book in 2009, so it's 2014 today, so obviously I did a very poor job in following that procedure, but I wanted to wait until I knew I had something to write about, and there was a fellow in one of my audiences who ran up midway through the presentation and was sweating and frustrated and said, Corey, I really need to get my Twitter feed syndicated to my website. Can you help me with that? You haven't covered it yet. And I said, yeah, sure. I'd be happy to do that. Tell me a little bit more about your business. And he said that he sells medical supplies to the elderly. And I kind of looked at him for a second. He looked at me, and we sort of had a Zen moment together where we both realized at the same time, it's like, what are you doing? You know, why are you even doing that? You know, why are you even focusing on Twitter when your audience is not there? And he just had this feeling of calmness go over him, and I saw the sweat dry up and the face light up, and he sort of skipped back to his seat, and that was the moment I realized that people understand the value of social media. They understand that they need to get it done. The challenge is there's too much out there. So the book is really focused on helping you figure out where you should focus and ignore the rest. Instead of being a jack of all social media sites, master of none, I want you to focus on a few and excel in those areas, and that's the goal of the book.
So let me ask you just that we'll start with some rapid-fire questions, then we'll go into some more in-depth sorts of concepts later. But, you know, I get a lot of questions. I'm sure you get even more questions about specific platforms. So, mm-hmm. For example, people will say, okay, everyone's talking about Facebook, and you got to be on Facebook, just like you mentioned about you got to be on Twitter. If I'm in a business-to-business setting, I'm in a B2B kind of business, is Facebook a total waste of time, or how should I be using Facebook smarter if I'm not selling, you know, coupons to Denny's and I'm not trying to get people to like Coca-Cola?
Well, and I'm glad you brought that one up first, because as many people who say, you know, Facebook is the behemoth, how could you not be on Facebook? There's a whole other side that says Facebook is passé, as crazy as that sounds, or you know, the up-and-coming generation's not interested in Facebook. And I just think both of those sides are nonsense. You know, you just look at the general statistics that Facebook's the largest website in the world. And more importantly than the number of people on Facebook, the part that really intrigues me is the amount of time people spend on Facebook. And you can just see that, you know, you look at the person. I was watching an interview with Gary Vaynerchuk yesterday, and he talked about the person sitting in the car seat next to you, and you look at like billboard ads, and he said he used to do that. But if you look, if you, anybody takes the opportunity to look at the guy who's sitting in the seat next to them and see if their eyes are ever up on the road looking at billboards or where their eyes are, 90% of the time their eyes are on their phone. And it's just a wow, you know, sort of in-your-face reminder that most of the time, instead of looking at these billboards or any, even actually looking at nature outside, they're on Facebook. And people spend more time on Facebook than any other site in the world. It's not even close. Google's not even, Google's a distant number two to Facebook. So, you know, obviously there's a lot of power there. The question is, how do you use it? I'm a B2B mostly type of business myself. And the way I've used Facebook is to deepen my relationships with my long-term VIP clients. So I have, and be very, very clear here, I have opened my personal Facebook page up to my business connections, open to my business connections. So gone are the days that I can post my rant on my political viewpoints, or if I'm frustrated by an airline and I just want to do a curse storm on Facebook to all my friends and family, that's all gone. I don't do that anymore. But on the other side, I have the opportunity to engage and connect with people who I also do business with. So, you know, whenever they are sharing an achievement that they've had that they've posted on Facebook, I get to be a part of that. Whenever they're struggling with some sort of challenge, they have a family member that's going through something, or they're just having something that they're strugging with, or if it's simply just they're having a birthday, or they've got, you know, they're a proud grandparent or a proud parent, I get to be there to be kind of part of that experience with my clients, and I love that. I'm a people person. As much as I'm a social media guy, I love the people interaction, and I want to be very clear that I do not believe that Facebook substitutes for offline interaction. I believe it's a beautiful complement to that relationship. And I had a client, I'll sort of end it with this, just think about, call me up, and he said, Corey, before we start talking business, I just want to tell you something. I got kind of nervous because he was my largest client that we have. He pays us well over five figures a year. And he said, Corey, I just want to let you know how cool it is to see how great of a dad you are. And I was like, oh, thank you. And he said, yeah, you know, I see all these pictures of you and Talia. He knows my daughter's name on Facebook, and it's just so lovely. I know you're a businessman. I know you're an entrepreneur. I know you travel. But man, I can just tell him that you love your daughter, and it's just so cool. And I just got to tell you, he's a spiritual man. He said, it just means a lot to me that you're a good dad. And I was like, wow. You know, that just reminds me that people care about the type of person you are, and they can see that through Facebook. So something to think about.
Absolutely. And one of the, I love that you brought up that story. One of the things I really believe is, one of the sales training gurus said this, and I wish I could put a name on it, but they said, don't worry about being a better salesperson. Worry about being a better person.
And
the sales will come, right? So people say, oh, he's a great salesperson. That's why I do business with him. No. He's a great person. That's why I do business with him. And as your story so brilliantly illustrates, Facebook is a very transparent way of showing the things you care about, the things you're interested in, the things that you're bringing attention to, whether it's your daughter or your new little baby son or your trips or your vacations or... You know, it's just great. It's just great because I love the way that you do use Facebook, by the way. And in case you're not following Corey on Facebook, you totally need to connect with him and follow him for two reasons. Number one, because you'll see just amazing pictures of him and his beautiful family and his ongoing adventures. But you'll also see this whole strategy of, you know, showcasing yourself as a three-dimensional person and not just as a business person or as a marketer or as a corporate kind of stuffed shirt kind of individual. So that's tremendous.
And David, let me real quick, I'll answer two quick questions I get a lot on this topic, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
One is, you know, is it okay to have two profiles, one for business, one for personal? And again, we're talking about personal Facebook pages here, not the business company page where people can like your page. Right now, we're just talking about personal pages. The answer to that question, of course, you can have two pages. I personally don't. I see it being two times the work. I also see that you're going to have business people try to connect with your quote-unquote personal page or friend page, and now you're going to have this awkward conversation of having to try to move them over to your quote-unquote business page. So, you know, it's a little uncomfortable, a little awkward in my opinion, but yes, you can do it. The other question I get, you know, well, gosh, Corey, doesn't this, you know, what if people, you know, tag me in photos? And there's a lot of fears that come up around this because you have business people seeing your personal site. And all of that is true. One of the you know, best practices I'll tell you is if you're even thinking about this strategy, or, and I hate to use it as a strategy, but just allowing your business contacts to be friends, you really got to get comfortable with the Facebook privacy settings. So, for example, you can make it so that if somebody tags you in a photo, it doesn't go on your profile until you approve it. That way, if some doofus from high school posts something, you know, of you, you know, drinking out of an ice luge back in school, you can say, no, thank you, and unfriend the guy you've been trying to disconnect yourself from for the last 20 years anyway, and not have that show up on your public profile. So you should get familiar with those settings if you decide to launch in this direction.
Tremendous. So let's move on to LinkedIn. I know that Okay. Everyone is on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is probably like the granddaddy. You know, LinkedIn was social media before we even called it social media. What are some of your best tips on maximizing LinkedIn, understanding that many of us are not even scratching the surface?
Yeah. Well, first of all, it starts with your profile. You know, I always tell people that anytime someone's going to meet with you or potentially do business with you, you know, 8 out of 10 times they're going to kick your tires at LinkedIn. It's an easy place to do it. You know, they don't have to, quote-unquote, connect with you to see what's going on like they do on Facebook. They can pretty much most of the time see everything on your profile. It's a safer place, and they know that. You know, they're not going to see a ton of pictures of family and such. It's going to kind of take them to business. So it's an opportunity for you to build credibility. So I'll give you guys a couple of best practice tips for your profile to start. One is make sure you have a current professional headshot. So that's sort of it seems to be something that you would think everybody's doing, but not necessarily. So try to, you know, on Facebook, I don't mind if you have a comfortable, you know, warm and fuzzy picture. But on LinkedIn, it's probably not a bad idea to have a nice headshot that you're proud of. Make it relevant if you can, as best you can there. The second one is the professional summary. And the biggest mistake I see on LinkedIn is people use it as a resume. And unless you're looking for a job, it shouldn't be a resume. And so your professional summary, which shows up right below your, you know, your name and your title and such, is your opportunity to tell people how you can help them. The quicker you can make it more geared toward the person reading your profile, the more interested they will be. The less you make it about your bio. You know, so I don't need to know that you worked, you know, in corporate America 25 years ago, blah, 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 all this, you know, bio stuff. Yes, some of that's important, but try to get to the benefits of working with you as quickly as possible. The third thing is quality recommendations. This is a big one. A lot of people have, you know, 75 or 60 or 30 recommendations from every human being that's ever come across them in the business world, and that's not necessarily a good thing. It clutters up your recommendations. I recommend quality over quantity. I'd rather see a few recommendations, current recommendations, of people who have done business with you. So I know David Glickman's on the phone. He's a speaker, and I mentioned this to him before. Instead of fellow speakers saying how great David is, which is nice, instead I want to see meeting planners talking about how he arrives early, how he calls and lets them know that he's there, how he comes and delivers a humongous value. I've seen David perform. He's amazing. You know, I think I probably already, I don't know if I haven't given you a LinkedIn recommendation, I'd be happy to, David. You know, and really talk about those buying signals that other meeting planners would want to see. And those are the type of quality recommendations you're looking for. So whatever industry you're in, it's your buyers, the people who love you, those are the kind of recommendations that you want to request and get on LinkedIn. And last but not least, David Newman, my other tip would be make sure you are sharing updates on your profile. So if I go to my profile right now, I just log into LinkedIn, there's a little speech bubble next to my picture here, and I can share an update. And so if I say a tip or something of value or a good article or something to that effect that would be of value to my audience and I hit share, it shows up on the news feed with every human being that I'm connected with on LinkedIn. So again, go back to that Gary Vaynerchuk example. Somebody's on their phone while you're, you know, the other person, hopefully the other person's driving as opposed to the person on the phone.
Right.
and they're looking at all their apps, and they click on LinkedIn app, and you just shared an update. Guess who just got in front of them? Not the dude who's paying $10,000 a month for the billboard, but you who shared an update on your LinkedIn profile. So don't forget to do that.
Wow, fantastic. How about LinkedIn groups? I think that's another area where people either miss a whole opportunity or they misuse the opportunity and get kicked out of the group. So what's the kind of magic secret sauce to the LinkedIn groups? For prospecting specifically, prospecting lead generation, like, you know, you and me and our buddy David might want to find meeting planners or conference producers. Hendrik Jan might want to find, you know, small business owners or medium-sized business owners who want to revamp their web presence. We've got other folks who do financial advisor kind of work. We've got folks who do in-home health care. There's prospecting opportunities for all of us in these LinkedIn groups, but I think a lot of folks haven't cracked the code on how to make that work.
Yeah, and the first step is, you know, when you log into LinkedIn, you can change this little category to groups, and then you can do some searching, and you can very quickly get to some common interest groups that would make sense for you to join. And I mentioned this in my book, and this is a big sort of best practice for folks listening. I've probably joined 100 groups on LinkedIn. I'm probably currently a member of about 7. So that means I've left 93 groups, right, roughly. So it's a good reminder that you're going to join a lot of groups, and many of them are not going to be of value to you, or they're just not going to be the right group. And I recommend leaving those groups, or you're going to get overwhelmed. But there's 7 or 10 groups out there probably that, man, not only are they great prospecting opportunities, but they're also great value sharing opportunities. So you can gain a lot. I get a lot of my social media information from these LinkedIn groups and such. The way to sort of show your value, and hopefully this is fairly obvious for a lot of you, but just in case, is you don't want to go in there with your sales hat on. You want to go in there with your help hat on or your value hat on. And you join the group and you find ways to help people. So when they ask questions, you answer them. When you see something of value, you share it. And slowly but surely, they start to look at you as a thought leader in your space. And you stay top of mind, which is an important part of this whole process. And it's a great way for you to slowly but surely start to build relationships with people in these groups. And then when it is time to take it to the next level, the tip I will give you is take it off of the group so it doesn't look like you're pitching. So if somebody is clearly showing signals that they want to work with you or that they could use your services, you might just say, hey, Steve, let's go meet for coffee. Send me your email, I'll send you some more information. Take it off the group and close the deal outside of that so it doesn't look like you're selling too hard there. So I think groups are great, David, but I want to share one other prospecting tip that I have on LinkedIn. It's actually my favorite tool in all of social media. Forget just LinkedIn. I'm talking everything. And it's a very simple way of using LinkedIn, but 91% of my audience doesn't use it this way. Can I share it with you real quick? Is that cool? Do we have time?
Oh, my God. I'm on the edge of my seat. Dude, let's hear it. Let's hear it.
All right. So this goes back to my hatred of cold calling. So a few years ago when I was starting my business, I was cold calling companies trying to get in there to either pitch my services or speak or whatever the case may be, and I was just really, really bad at it. I'm not good at talking about myself. If I had a David Newman following me around, sharing, you know, the experiences that I've had through him, man, I would be doing a lot better. But when I have to do it myself, I'm just not very good at it. So I needed to find a better way. So I jumped on LinkedIn one day. I was going out to California to do a speaking event, and so I searched Los Angeles under the category of companies just to see if there were any other companies I might be able to do business with out there. So I typed in Los Angeles on the search box, and a bunch of companies showed up on LinkedIn. And I found this one company called AEG Entertainment, and they own the Forum there where the Clippers and the Lakers play, and they've got a huge sales force there. I knew I could do some LinkedIn training for that group if I could get through to them. So I clicked on their company profile, learned a lot about AEG Entertainment just from LinkedIn. Thank you very much. But the most important thing I saw there were all the decision makers. I saw the vice president of sales. I saw the director of human resources, vice president of marketing. Every major decision maker from this large company was sitting right in front of me on LinkedIn, which is just cool in itself. I totally just bypassed the gatekeeper if I wanted to. I'd go directly to the source, the person who can write the check. But, again, I don't like cold calling, so I would have had to cold call these people and try to tell them that I'm the social media guy, I wrote this best-selling book, blah, 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 and know that they want to hang up on me in 2 seconds. So I clicked on the vice president of sales profile and found him. So I found his profile, and he had a number 2 next to his name. Okay, so we'll call him Steve. So Steve had a number 2 next to his name, which indicated to me, which I didn't know at the time, but I know now, means that we have a mutual connection. So Steve knows somebody that I know. Interesting. So when I clicked on his profile, LinkedIn is kind enough to tell me who that mutual connection is. It happens to be Aaron. Okay? Now, Aaron saw me speak in Michigan, and somehow in this crazy, goofy world is connected to Steve. So at that point, I call up Aaron. Hey, Corey, how you doing, man? Good. How are you doing, Aaron? Nice to talk to you. It's been a while. You know how things going? Exchange some pleasantries. Hey, man, I'm heading to L.A. I want to check out this company, AEG Entertainment. I see you're connected to Steve. Tell me how you know him. Well, he used to work with us, actually. He used to work out here in Michigan, and he just moved out to L.A. a month ago. Really? Yeah, and I still know him. We're still very close. Awesome, man. Would you mind introducing me to Steve? So Aaron sends an email, which I actually physically received, copied me on it, and said, Steve, you have to meet with Corey, and here's why, blah, 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 blah. So he warmed that cold call up perfectly for me, teed me up. Even I couldn't screw that up. So the point of this little exercise is anytime you are looking to prospect, before you ever pick up the phone and cold call, find that individual, if you know who they are, or find the company and see if there's a number 2 next to their name and figure out a way or see if you have a relationship with that common connection. And if you do, you can connect with them either specifically through LinkedIn or you can actually just pick up the phone and call them, which I tend to do because I think it makes more sense. And if they have a relationship with that individual, then it's magic. If they don't, sorry, man, I literally have no idea who that is. I don't know why I'm connected with them. Then don't ask for the introduction. It wouldn't make sense. So hopefully, for those of you who are listening, if that sort of rings a bell to you, and if it's confusing at all for you, my suggestion is go play with it. Go check out some number 2s and see what it looks like. And I'm telling you, it's magic. It's made a ton of money for a lot of people that I know.
Wow, that's a golden nugget. Now this brings up another question, and I gotta follow the trail here because that's why it's an interrogation and not an interview. A lot of people ask, okay, on LinkedIn, do I connect with everybody? Do I connect with just people who I know and love and would trust my children with? Is there some middle ground? You know, if someone sends me a LinkedIn connection invite and I have no idea who they are, is it good to build that network? Like the more Twitter followers, the better. The more Facebook likes, the better. Same rules on LinkedIn, different rules on LinkedIn, up to us. How does it work?
I think, David, as the question comes near to you, you should get some sound effects, the dun-dun-dun, something like that.
Dun-dun-dun.
Yeah, put a big spotlight on my face. It will really screw up this strategy if you connect with anyone, especially people you don't know.
Damn it.
So LinkedIn doesn't really know that, so they're going to show you number 2s for people that you're connected with that you don't know. And so, of course, they can't introduce you. So the goal is quality over quantity, meaning that you really need to figure out who, what relationship you have with these individuals. An example that comes to mind to me is I work with some franchisees, and they always ask me, should I be connecting with other franchisees? And I say, yeah, that's okay. But really you're looking for, especially if you're a local business, you're looking for local connections, because those are the ones that can introduce you to other local companies. So just be thinking about that as you're building your network on LinkedIn. The stronger your sphere of influence is, the better this tool works. So quality over quantity when it comes to connecting, David.
Got it. Now, so that's brilliant advice, period. And I think it especially applies to what you're talking about, Corey, with the local businesses and the marketing executives and the sales executives and some of the business owners. How about those of us, and there's not a lot of us, but those of us in the program who are more sort of quote-unquote public figures? So, you know, speakers, authors, consultants that have some kind of following. Same rules, different rules, and then I'm even thinking for myself, selfishly, because, you know, I'm learning as well. Would it make sense for me to go through my LinkedIn and unlink with the people who I have no idea who they are? So two questions rolled into one. Does your advice apply equally to quote-unquote public figures? You know, if yes, should us quote-unquote public figures go through our LinkedIn and chop off those connections where we have no idea who that person is?
Well, I wouldn't do that necessarily, David, because here's the thing, especially in our industry, they might have been an attendee at your presentation. And
yeah.
So they're an excellent source for a number two, actually, even though you may not know who they are. Now, of course, that's a little bit of a challenge with, asking them for the referral, but you don't want to unfriend these people who love you and are a fan of you, so to speak. I would just... You know, this is what I always say, especially to people in our industry. And I always tell this when I'm in my group. If you go to connect with somebody, I always recommend changing that default line that says, you know, I'd like to add you to my network. And tell
oh my
me,
gosh, totally, me too.
Yeah, tell me why. You know, so when I go speak in front of 400 people, I need you, if you're going to link to me, just to remind me. Of course, I don't know who you are. That you were in my group. But if you were in my group, you absolutely get to connect with me. No doubt about it. No problem with that. The
yeah.
only time, David, that I ignore a LinkedIn request is if two reasons. One is, I will investigate your – if you give me the default thing and you don't tell me how I know you, I'll go through your thing. I'll say, oh, you were in St. Louis and I was just there. You most likely were probably in my audience. Connect. Or I'll see, you know, it'll say Association of Marketing Executives, a great, you know, prospect for me. Sure, why not? So if there's a reason for me to connect, yes. If I see absolutely zero connection, I just can't figure out, I get suspect a little bit. And I'm like, and I'll usually ignore it. So if you look on my thing here, I probably got 600 ignores of just people that I couldn't figure out. And I'm too
sure.
Call me whatever, but I'm too much of a nice guy to actually say no. So then I just sit there and leave it alone. The other thing I said too, that was one. The other thing that I do watch out for a little bit is if they're a social media speaker, I'll probably connect with them because they're a colleague and I most likely know them. If they start creeping into my world of, you know, social media consultant or I just kind of get the sense that they might be trying to kick my tires a little bit and possibly poach, then of course I will not connect with them. So it takes me a little bit of an investigation process. But I'd say if I had 10 connections, you know, seven of them or eight of them I typically connect with as a public figure.
Gotcha. Perfect. Let's move on to another hotly debated topic. I get this question a lot. I'm sure you get it 10 times more than I do. It's a content marketing question. Blog or email? Blog or email? Corey, should I blog? Or Corey, should I send an email newsletter? And then if I should blog, what's the difference between a blog and an email newsletter? If I send an email newsletter, should I put that in my blog? Blog, email, email, blog, help us out.
Yeah, good question. If I had to choose between the two, I often in my audiences will ask, how many of you have checked your email today? And 100% every time raise their hand. So it's still a reminder to me that email is an extremely powerful marketing channel. So if I had to pick between the two, I'd pick email. I always tell people, it's a little bit of a dramatic analogy, but if somebody had a gun to my head and said, Corey, you got to sell something today, what would I do first? I'd send an email out. Because just from my own experience, that's how we trigger sales the most, even more than social media, even more than blogs. That's what we do. Of course, the challenge with email today is that people get so much of it that it's extremely difficult to get our emails opened and also read, and then, of course, spread, which means that the ultimate goal of an email piece is to get people to forward it on. That's the best thing we could possibly ask for. The goal of the challenge with that, obviously, is people don't want to open it. So what we need to do is think about value over frequency. So the question I'm often asked when it comes to emails, how often should I email? I care less about how much you email and care more about the type of value you're putting in your email. So what I would really recommend to the folks listening is to rethink your email marketing strategy and focus on how you can help people so that when they are glancing at 21 emails and they see your subject line and they say, damn, I got to check that out real quick, or at least I got to put that somewhere where I make sure I go see it. And we can do it, but we got to be super strategic about it. So, in my world, I try to find things that I know people are hungry for. You just asked the content marketing question. I've been asked that before. I try to put that in my subject line. A best practice for email is I find that, five things, seven ways, six tips, those quick bite-sized things that people can just sink in and use really quickly are very, very helpful. So, and then the other thing to think about is frequently asked questions. So the three or four things that you always get a question on, always get. So I'm always getting, which tools should I focus on? Or how do I get more fans to my Facebook page? Or how do I get better open rates to my email? So if I'm getting those questions all the time, I turn those into email or blogging pieces. Now, the question you also asked about blogging, we have a little bit of a secret formula that we use for our clients, and I'll share that with you guys now. Blogging takes a long time. If you do it right, you're writing a 300 to 700 word article to put into your blog, and that can take a couple hours. So I don't like making people that I talk to spend a ton of time on this stuff. So because that's the longest activity of anything that I talk about, we try to use those articles as absolutely much as we can. So what I would recommend if you're going to do a blogging strategy is try to do it. You have to do it consistently. So either one article a week or one a month, either one. But let's say you decide to do an article a week. So if you write that article on Monday, the answer to your question, David, is yes, you can absolutely use it in your newsletter. People who read your blog don't necessarily read your email piece. People who read your email piece don't necessarily read your blog. I've never in my life been asked, why do you always regurgitate your content? People don't do that. They just choose for people to, they just choose the channel that they want to soak in content for.
Interesting.
So that's one. And then the other thing is syndicate that content like an absolute beast. So take that article, the five tips, and use those five tips as social media posts throughout the week. So tip number one is, whatever it is, you take that tip and you put it on your LinkedIn status update, your Facebook status update, your Twitter, whatever social media sites you're using, and then you say, for the rest of the tips, click on this link to the blog. And then on Tuesday, it's tip number two. Wednesday, it's tip number three. So we use the material from that blog article in our social media postings throughout the week. Man, does that make us feel good? Because we don't have to come up with content every day. We just use that article. And if you really want to get crazy, David, like I know you do, you can take that article and turn it into a video script. You and I can sit together on a Skype interview, and I can use this script and use it as a podcast for us or a video, so you can really take it and run with it.
Repurpose, recycle, reframe, reuse.
You got it.
Genius. All right, well, let me ask you another question as a part of our interrogation, and we'll go another maybe 5 or 10 minutes, then we'll open it up for Q&A, because I'm sure our folks have a ton of questions for you as well. Some of your favorite tech tools to manage all of this, like when you talk about, repurposing tweets throughout the week, I know that you and our friend Jay Baer are big fans of Buffer, right, Buffer app. And, you know, some people use Hootsuite, and I'm just kind of scratching the surface on some things that are pretty well known. What's in the secret Corey Perlman toolkit? What are some cool platforms and software and services that you find or that you recommend for your clients to manage all of this craziness without going bananas?
Well, I've got my Speaker Magazine here with Terry Brock right on the cover, so I should just open it up and steal all his stuff. You know?
There you go.
one that comes to mind, actually, it popped in my mind, and I think it makes sense to mention it here, that I really like. I really highly recommend that you have a mobile version of your site today. Gone are the days where you just want to shrink your website down to fit a mobile device. It doesn't work anymore. People want to be able to navigate with their thumbs. And so there's a really cool resource. If you haven't made your site mobile responsive yet, a short-term solution is Duda Mobile. So I'll spell that. It's DudaMobile.com. And they're like a little car wash. You know, you put your website in there and it spits it out mobile ready for you in like minutes. It's awesome. There's a free version and a paid version. And you'll be amazed. It literally like scans your site and turns it into more of a vertical thumb-friendly site. Really cool. Is it a perfect solution? No. I think eventually you need to get a designer to actually do a mobile responsive site for you. But man, it's a great short-term solution. So that's Duda, D-U-D-A, and then mobile.com. I find that to be a very good solution. When it comes to using Twitter and syndicating content onto different social media channels, I prefer TweetDeck over Hootsuite. They're both very similar tools. TweetDeck is owned by Twitter. Hootsuite is its own beast. A lot of people like Hootsuite better. I just am more familiar with TweetDeck. Again, it's T-W-E-E-T and then D-E-C-K.com. And a couple reasons to use this tool. One is, as David mentioned, you can syndicate your post to different social media channels. So if you heard me say something that you thought was good and you wanted to post it out to your network, you could go to TweetDeck, you could write the post, put my name on it, and then choose the social media channels that you sent it out to, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, whatever. It's very cool. So that's cool in itself. But the reason I like TweetDeck and Hootsuite's the same thing is to be able to funnel conversations into topics that you care about. So the biggest challenge with Twitter is that every time you go there, you see tweets about Justin Bieber and whatever goofy topic is going on in the world today that you could care less about. But if you use these tools, you can start funneling conversation into topics you care about. So let me give you an example. What David Newman can do is he can go to TweetDeck and he can make a column of conversation with the topic marketing speaker. And then anything that's ever mentioned on Twitter with the words marketing speaker shows up in that column. So when David opens up his TweetDeck, instead of seeing posts about Justin Bieber, he sees anything that has the words marketing speaker in it, regardless if he's following or connected to that individual or not.
As in, we are looking for A.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The big, fat, juicy softball that you're looking for. And by the way, I actually saw a tweet a month or two ago that said, we are looking for a social media speaker to speak to blah, 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 blah. And I was just like, man, you know, this is too perfect. I even took a screenshot of it.
That's funny.
They didn't have budget, but at least, you know, it was a potential opportunity. So TweetDeck, you know, is huge for funneling conversation into certain topics. And, you know, again, if you're a real estate agent, you know, you can put in your local areas. You can put in real estate agent Milwaukee WI or whatever. I mean, you can play with these different keywords. If you're a sports fan, put in your sports team, and you will know more about your sports team than any sports center can ever give you. Because when guys get traded, they go on their Twitter and they type in where they got traded to. So you'll know before SportsCenter will know, based on, you know, having TweetDeck connected with these keywords. So it's a phenomenal way of not only syndicating your messages onto different social media platforms, but also just having a more valuable experience from Twitter, because you get to ignore the noise and get to focus in on conversations you actually care about. So I love TweetDeck is one of my favorite ones. And if anything else pops in my head, David, I'll chime in and mention it.
Tremendous. Good, good, good. Well, I've got a whole lot more questions, but I want to open it up in case our folks have questions for you. If they don't, I am prepared to jump in with a whole lot more for Corey Perlman. So who's got the first question who's not me?
This is David Glickman here. Corey, I heard your strategy with LinkedIn and, you know, who you accept requests from and who you don't. What about with Facebook? If you're not doing a business page, you're just doing the personal page like you, and that's kind of representing your whole persona. I get these Facebook requests just from all over the planet, and I don't accept probably two-thirds of them. Is that a mistake? I have no idea who these people are, where they're coming from.
Yeah. Thanks, David, for the question. I don't think that's a mistake. Yeah, that's a little bit of a different environment. You know, I still look at it. I always say only connect with VIP clients. Those who, you know, so in your world, it would be, you know, it would be colleagues, obviously, like
right.
us. It would be, you know, I have connected with meeting planners that have booked me, you know, a couple of times. Bureau agents that have booked me are great candidates to do. But, you know, I will have the occasional Steve Smith, who just saw me at a speaking event, try to ping me on Facebook. And, you know, for me personally, it's not – that's just opening it up too much for me. So there's two ways you can go about that. If actually three ways. You can ignore it, which some people do. You can tell them, oh, hey, man, this is my personal page. I don't necessarily – I do recommend also having a fan page, David. So I do have a fan page for my business and people – and then, of course, anybody can like that, and the more the merrier. And so I might direct them there. Or here's the third thing you can do. You can actually accept their friend request and then hide their posts. So now they're just sort of following you and what you're saying, but you're not having to see what they're saying.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah. I do that a lot.
Yeah, okay.
Like that David Newman guy. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen any posts from him, but you just, you know.
I'm real quiet all the time.
Does that answer your question, David?
Yes, it does. Yes, thank you.
Okay. No problem.
All right, who's got the next question? Anything social media strategy, tactics, tools, clearing up any confusion?
Well, I'll jump in again if no one's jumping in. So, Corey, what you brought up was excellent with the LinkedIn. And while you were talking, I just went on. I put a prospect in the search of LinkedIn, say for argument's sake, American Hospital Association. And I found there were a number of folks that had the second, the two next to it, which means they're connected with someone, correct, and I'm connected with them.
Correct.
But as I looked through all of those twos, I didn't know any of them. I mean, mm-hmm. we connected at some point, but there was no one I could pick up the phone and call like you picked up the phone and called that gentleman, you know, for the AEG thing. I guess it makes more sense if it's only someone you know, because reaching out to this person
you're absolutely 100% correct. So, and I appreciate you bringing this up, so I forgot to mention it. A huge caveat to that strategy is if you don't know the person that you're connected to, don't ask for the introduction. It actually happened to me on the reverse. I had a guy call me up and ask for an introduction to somebody I was connected with, and I had no idea the guy was on the other line. It's like, really? I mean, you know, so you don't do that. And, okay. and that happens a lot, and that goes back to what David asked earlier about the more people you've connected with that are kind of strangers, the more likely that is to happen. So, and that's okay that's happened. It's just it's one of those things that you got to keep doing, and eventually that perfect relationship will occur where you do know the person. And then, of course, like I said, you might call them all excited because that's a buddy of yours or they love you, or let's say it's me. You know, and you're like, Corey, you know, I need you to introduce me to Steve. And I'm like, oh, David, I would love to introduce you to Steve. The problem is I have no freaking idea who that guy is. You know, and so it's like, damn,
right.
Almost. But
right,
I'm
right.
telling you right now, you keep trying it over and over and over again, and it will work out.
Okay, cool. All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. One other thing to mention, too, on that is a lot of people ask me about LinkedIn Premium, you know, about paying for the membership to LinkedIn. And I often recommend that wait till you start getting dead end. So, David Glickman, if you start doing what I just talked about, after a little bit, they're going to stop you and say, you can't do this anymore. And at that point, if this is working for you and you've actually booked a gig or two, it's probably worth the $39 or $49 or whatever the deal is these days to go ahead and do the premium subscription. But I typically recommend people not doing it right off the bat, because if they're not getting into the habit of using LinkedIn as a prospecting tool, it's kind of a waste of money.
Okay.
Well, I've got one just to prime the pump here a little bit. Let's talk about email collection, lead generation on the web, subscription, pop-ups, hello bar, anything and everything to grab as many possible email addresses from our web presence and from our content marketing as humanly possible. My theory that I share with people, and feel free to shoot this down, Corey, if you disagree, every website visitor who comes to your website and finds something relevant who does not leave you with their email address is a lost opportunity.
Yeah.
So how do we fix that, and what are some strategies that you recommend for email list building and lead capture?
Yeah, so, you know, a slide that I have in every presentation I've ever done says failure equals when a person visits your website and leaves without giving you their information.
Well, so, I think I may have gotten this concept from you then. So there you go.
Or vice versa. So bottom line is, we agree.
Yeah.
And I'm very strong on that, David. And it's very difficult, you know, and it's easier. It's one of the classic easier said than done, because who wants to give up their email address nowadays? You know, we don't want to be spammed, you know, blah, 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 blah. So, again, it goes to that value point, you know, and I think about it all the time. I really do. It's kind of sad. I change my opt-in form, and just to be extra clear with people, when you go to my website, if you go to ebootcamp.com, right there on the left, you'll see a little opt-in form that says, you know, if you give me your name and email address, in exchange, I'll give you all the resources that I've ever come up with that have helped me online, or something like that. And I'm always looking for different ways to do that. And I'm watching my opt-in, and you can do this. You can actually watch your conversion rate. So there's a thank you page that goes after someone opts in, and all you got to do is watch the percentage. So if 1,000 people visit your site in the month of July and 100 people get to that thank you page, you got a 10% conversion, I think, something like that. And then you can move that needle. If you try something else and it drops down, then you know that you need to put it back up. Or if you try something else and it increases, then you know you're on the right track. So we do that all the time. And the more value you can offer in exchange for their information, the better. Let me give you a huge best practice tip here that we learned the hard way. And that is, do not ask for their email and then send them to the page that has whatever you're going to offer. Because then they can put in the email address, you know, I just screwed you over at AOL.com. And then go right to the bonus and take the bonus.
Bozo@bozo.com.
Bozo@bozo.com, exactly. Instead, send them an email with the bonus. So at least, even if they give you a crappy email address that they only check once in a blue moon, at least it's a legitimate email in order to get whatever you're offering. So again, what I'm saying is, if you're offering a free report, if you're offering some sort of article, newsletter subscription, whatever, just make sure you say you're going to get it over email. That way they are assured to put a legitimate email address in the email field. That's something, again, we've learned over time. But I sincerely encourage you, if you do not have a easy-to-see opt-in form on your website, put one on there and then give away something as unbelievably valuable as you possibly can in exchange for their information, because it's the only way that you can take control of that relationship. If you don't, then you're going to have to hope that they remember you, David Glickman, when they're in buy mode. Maybe they're in research mode today, but 3 months from now they're in buy mode. Now they got to remember you. Instead, collect their information, stay in touch with them month in and month out with good information, and when they're in buy mode, you're right there.
Right.
Let me also put a little bit of a subtle twist on this, because David Glickman in particular is making me think of this. He's always the problem child. Think about, and it has to do with problems, so I'm sort of kidding. Think about solving that prospect's problem. So don't think about what you do, right? Because what David does is this brilliant, funny, musical, motivational speaking. Nobody has a humorous, funny, musical, motivational speaker problem. But that meeting planner, that conference producer, that association executive, you know what they have? They have a speaker selection problem, or they have a conference ROI problem, or they have a how to build attendance at your next event problem. Now, is part of that hire a really fabulous speaker, make sure that the experience of being at your event is equal to or greater than the content? Are there some subtle places that David could sort of, you know, promote his own value prop? Yes. But, you know, if we're in a content business or a service business, yes, your opt-in goodie should be around your content or around your service or around your product. If it's indirect, and when I say indirect, I mean that your market is different than your audience, right? Your market, your economic buyer is your market. Your audience or the end users is your audience. Make the opt-in goodie for the buyer, not for the audience.
100%, 1,000% agree. And the thing I always encourage people to do is think of the most frequently asked questions that you get, you know, or that you know that they're thinking about, which is what you're saying, David. And in David Glickman's world, for the meeting planners, yeah, you know, all of us have been through that process. It's interesting too, because if we're an NSA, National Speakers Association, you've ever had a role with the board, then you've actually switched roles and you've been in the meeting planner's shoes, so you can really kind of help to add value in that regard. And then switching industries, you know, if say you got a dentist on the line, you know, think about what people who are visiting your site, what are they struggling with? You know, how to keep your teeth healthy and white, especially if you're a coffee drinker. You know, it's something that I'm sure a lot of people care about. Is it true that you know, gum disease can lead to other diseases? You know, answering those questions. Chiropractors, you know, they say that, you know, chiropractors can help you avoid, you know, getting the flu. Is that real? You know, those type of things. You know, three things that you can do to relieve stress. You know, get more energy in your day. You know, so just things like that that you can think of that really can add value to people is absolutely huge.
Well, and then also think about if you're the dental implant company. You're not the dentist now, but you're the dental implant company. You don't want to talk to consumers about their teeth. You want to talk about dentists, about how dental implants can be an instant profit center for your practice.
Great point. Yeah,
because, you know, think about the channel, think about the buyer, think about the check writing entity. You want your opt-in goodie, and you want to have a little special place in your heart and a special place in your lead generation system. Well, here's the bottom line. You want lead generation for leads. You don't want lead generation to collect tire kickers, price shoppers, goofballs, and goobers. So if you know who your buyer is, make the opt-in goodie aimed squarely at that buyer. They're going to take the bait. That's how you build your list with economic buyers.
Yeah, great point.
Fantastic. All right, who's got the final question before I ask Corey my final question, and we'll wrap up and let Corey get back to changing the world and kicking some social media butt? Final question going once. Everyone is in shock and awe, or they're on LinkedIn, clicking on the number twos, going, screw the phone call, I'm going to make some sales today.
Well, it's Glickman here again. I just don't want to be selfish in my questioning here.
No, go for it, buddy.
So to your point there, Corey, what I'm thinking, at least in my world, that would be valuable to the economic buyer maybe would be a white paper talking about how to select speakers. Because everything else I offer would be fun and content for the audience member, and I don't know if that is valuable to the buyer.
You know,
I could put videos, I could put funny, all stuff to make people laugh, but that I don't know if that's going to help someone buy me.
Well, you might actually have a instead of an either or, maybe an and opportunity here, meaning that, you know, maybe when they're on your hire me page, so to speak, you have something that's more geared toward the meeting planner. And maybe when you have a general David Glickman page, you know, because you don't want to totally ignore, even though they're not buyers, it's nice to collect people's information of fans or attendees. And the reason that is they can always refer you.
Right.
You know, I love having a large list mixed with meeting planners, bureaus, and fans, because fans can refer you business, you know. So I think it's more about, you know, whatever page you're on. And you can always have multiple opt-in forms. You know, maybe you have one above that says for meeting planners, and then one right below that, you know, how to get the funny out of your story or presentation or whatever, you know, something like that.
Right, right. Okay, that's cool, because I think people do want some entertainment possibly, and that can help be trigger part of the buying process.
So if you really
go ahead.
Well, I'll just say one quick thing that, you know, in your case, especially, you know, the nice thing about the world of funny is that we all care about it. You know, we all love to be entertained. So maybe if you had on there, this might be a catch-all, but like subscribe to David's funny video of the week. You know, and I always, this is actually brings up another point of we're all curators of content. So in my world, I'm always seeing social media stuff. So I got to filter all that stuff and deliver to my network the stuff that I find valuable. And that's valuable in itself, being a curator of content. In your world, David, because you're funny, you're probably seeing funny stuff all the time and some stuff that's not so funny. And just by delivering that to us and sort of giving us your point of view on what's funny, that's valuable in itself. You know, so that might be a catch-all. What were you going to say, Newman?
Well, again, in David's case, because now we're doing the David Glickman workshop, which is awesome. two pieces, right? One called Bring the Value, that's for the meeting planner, and one called Bring the Funny, and that's for the audience.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
Bring the value to your meeting, bring the funny to your audience.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
there you go. See, I got a million of them. It's awesome. So I'm going to ask Corey two last questions, actually. I promised one, but I'm going to give you two. The first question I'm going to ask you is final closing tip, final way to avoid social media overload and start thinking about social media smartly, any kind of wrap-up words of wisdom you have. And then second question I'm going to ask you is the best way for folks to get in touch with you and stay connected to your world and to subscribe to your brilliance on an ongoing basis.
I appreciate that, David, and this has been a fun conversation, so thanks again for having me. I would just say my final point is to, when it, you know, we're going to leave this call and, you know, A, there's sites that we didn't talk about, so you might be thinking, what about Pinterest? What about Instagram? What about Snapchat and all these things? You know, the first thing I would say is don't sweat it. You know, stay focused on the sites that you know have a direct connection to your business. Like again, David Glickman has talked about. He's very focused on LinkedIn and Facebook, as am I, because in my business, that's where my people are. But if you are, you know, I worked with a dirt bike brand, and they're huge on Instagram, so that's a place for them. And if you're, I'm also working with this company called Brownie Brittle. And they're huge on Pinterest. So you have to be open to what's out there and then figure out if there's a business reason to spend your time or plant your flag there. So what I would say to the audience is don't be closed-minded. Don't get frustrated. And don't shut off the tools just because you're annoyed by them. Instead, look at them strategically and say, okay, what is this site about? What's the type of audience that's there? And is my audience there? If not, don't worry about it. If yes, then maybe you explore it a little bit more. You learn about it a little bit more, and you stay open to it. So that's one final tip. And then it's a couple last, you know, just kind of rules to watch out for. The number one rule I would say is be consistent. You know, a thing that I see most businesses fail in social media is they'll start a Twitter profile, start a Facebook page, and then they'll let it die on the vine. And that's just the worst thing you can do. I'd rather you delete the profile than let it die on the vine. So keep it updated. If you're going to have a profile out there, keep it updated and be proactive in building a network there or an audience there. If you're not willing to do that, or if you can't do that for whatever reason, it's okay to delete it. But to have a LinkedIn profile with 12 connections, or a Facebook fan page with 37 fans, or a YouTube channel with 11 views, in my opinion, does you more harm than good. So watch out for that. And the last thing I'll say, David Newman, and this is something that I don't have to tell you because you're great with it, is have fun. What I mean by having fun is, you know, make sure that you, in any, you know, social media is a social environment. So the more you can be creative, have fun, and try to stand above the noise, the more you'll impact your audience. Don't just be the standard old whatever in your industry, but find ways to be different. And the more you can do that, the more success you'll have.
Fantastic. And then ways for us to tap into your world.
Right. Oh, yeah, Mimi, that's right. I almost forgot that. You know, if you're listening or happen to hear this before July 22nd, you know, it's the official launch of my book, July 22nd, 2014, trying to keep my dad off Twitter. And, you know, it's his 70th birthday, and he's asked me to help him get on Twitter. So my goal that day is the more books I sell, the more he will be proven that you don't have to be on all social media sites. So if you want to learn more about that, you can go to socialmediaoverload.com/dad. But the point is if you don't mind, buy the book on Amazon on July 22nd or get somebody else to do that. That would really mean a lot to me if you wouldn't mind doing that. And also review the book while you're there if you've already read it. And to get a hold of me, you can go to coreyperlman.com. That's CoreyPerlman.com. Or if you want to learn more about the book, you can go to socialmediaoverload.com. Thanks for having me, David.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for all the wealth of information and resources and great ideas that we can make money with immediately, which is my favorite kind of ideas, is the kind that you can make money with immediately. All right, my friends. Well, thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you to the awesome Corey Perlman. Thank you to you guys for tuning in. Thank you to all of the folks who are listening in on this recording after the fact. And I'll tell you something. Even if it's after July 22nd, maybe even especially if it's after July 22nd, you absolutely, totally, and completely have to plug in to Social Media Overload. It's a fantastic book. Not only is it one of the best social media books that I've read, I'm going to even go further. It may be the only social media book that you need to read, because equal parts what to do and equal parts what not to do and what not to waste your time on. And you can just free up hours and hours and hours every single week and go on vacation and play with your kids and catch up with Netflix. And, you know, you can just get the hell off social media. Except where it's going to put money in your pocket, which is what Corey specializes in. So that's it, my friends. Thank you, Corey. Thank you, everyone. We'll talk next time.
Bye. Thank you, David.
You bet.